The actual bomb making that was done by Timothy and Terry Nichols.
No, I don't think so.
Isn't that what we were led to believe?
It's what we were led to believe. I don't think so.
And you think there were others in the building of that bomb?
Yes. I think that's a very sophisticated device. That's what I've been told by the people who've spent a career, a lifetime, doing that sort of thing. And by doing that sort of thing, I mean they were in law enforcement in the UK and Israel. And that explanation has no credibility among them. And there are various reasons why Tim's description to me of how it was built, they said that's a fiction, that's myth, that's not possible.
He wasn't even capable, as bright as he was, of building something so sophisticated, he and Terry?
They were not. The only evidence of the one time that Tim McVeigh attempted to build any improvised explosive device is the testimony of Laurie and Michael Fortier, in which Tim takes them out to the desert in Arizona and tries to blow up a rock, and it fizzles. That was in, I think, December of 94. In April of 1995, he is able to do the engineering of the largest improvised explosive device ever detonated in this country, even greater than World Trade Center 1. I'm satisfied that he didn't do it. The government says, well, of course he had this book on plastic explosives and how to make a bomb. But if you read those books, the Anarchist Cookbook, that was it. And it's not just simply a question of extrapolating the formula and say, well, instead of using half a teaspoon, we'll use a pint. It doesn't work that way. We sat down and talked to people in Israel and the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom was really the best place because the improvised explosive device that was used by the provisional IRA for 20 or 30 years were ammonium nitrate bombs, allegedly the bomb here. They explained to me how they worked, what the mechanics were, and how they were dangerous and put together. And I left the meeting convinced that if you're going to protect the others, you say, I did it. Terry Nichols and I did it. Of course, he never said publicly that he and Terry Nichols did it. But he told me, and it's in the transcript, because we tape recorded it, that when he got ready to leave to drive to Oklahoma City, Terry Nichols shook his hand and said, good luck. Of course, they were all involved. There's two or three things that, unless you want to suspend all belief and you are willing to assume that you can pile coincidences on coincidences, here is kind of a definitive test. After the bombing, the FBI and the Columbus, Ohio Police Department arrest several of the Midwest bank robbers. Now, the Midwest bank robbers, I am convinced, were involved in one of the cells that planned the Oklahoma City bombing. When they raid this safe house that they're maintaining in Columbus, Ohio, they find in a sack explosives that are exactly the same as allegedly stolen by McVeigh and Nichols from the quarry at Marion, Kansas.
Real quick, the Midwest Bank.
The Midwest bank robbers held up 22 banks in the Midwest. They were in and out of Elohim City. Elohim City is the so-called Christian Identity compound in eastern Oklahoma, where the remnants of the Covenant, the Sword, and the Ark went after the raid of April the 19th, 1985. In this sack, there's a cigarette lighter and a small box and Christmas wrapping. First of all, let me tell you that the FBI destroys within 24 hours the explosives. But before they did it, the Columbus, Ohio Police Department took photographs. And I think Roger Charles may have those photographs in his book. But in any event, the significance of that is that Laurie Fortier testified that in December 1994, as Tim McVeigh is coming back this way, she goes to his motel room and packs all the explosives that he's got because they had moved all of the stuff out to Kingman, Arizona and stored it, and he was now bringing it back, that she had wrapped them in Christmas wrapping so that if he was stopped and he had all these boxes, whoever stopped him would think, this kid's returning home for Christmas. He's got these Christmas presents. So here, 6 or 7 months later, in some of the very same bank robbers, are these same explosives that are identical to the ones taken from Marion in a sack with Christmas wrapping. Now, unless you want to believe that those people gave each other Christmas gifts and saved the wrapping, which I personally find a little difficult to believe, those are some of the same things that Laurie Fortier wrapped. Well, how'd they get there? They got there because 10 or 15 of these people are all in this together. And the government at one time even came close to alleging that. And the key is, if you read the indictment that was returned against Tim McVeigh, you will find, I used to know what paragraph it is, I'm sorry, I don't remember anymore, but there's a paragraph in there that says the conspiracy to bomb the Alfred P. Murrah building began, and it gives a specific date, and it's like, let's just say September 21st, 1994. Well, on September the 21st, 1994, Tim McVeigh was in Vian, Oklahoma, because he's registered at a motel there. And Vian, Oklahoma is right down the street from Robert Millar's residence. Robert Millar was the person in charge of the compound at Elohim City. And most of the Midwest City bank robbers were also at Elohim City on that weekend. Now, is that a coincidence? I suppose it's possible, except Tim McVeigh didn't usually go to Vian, Oklahoma. But what is really significant about it is that never again did the government mention September the 21st. It disappeared from the government's case. Not introduced at trial, no evidence of it, no discovery of it, nothing. So why did the government put it in there in the first place? Why did the government take satellite photographs of Elohim City? Why did they have undercover informants there? Because they knew that those people had an agenda. Reverend Millar, in one of his sermons, said, "We're next after Waco. You all know what to do."